Welcome to the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As a leading manifestation advisor with a process that's, well, radically different from the old New Age model, mine is rooted in psychology, neuroscience, and my energetic gifts. Therefore, I created this podcast to help you expand your subconscious limiting beliefs about the potential of deserving the manifestations you're calling in. In each episode, we'll walk through my expanders, a term in my manifestation formula signaling the people that we admire that already embody, have, or are successful in what we are looking to call in. These are the people that we witness through our mirror neurons on a subconscious level that expand us into knowing that our manifestations are possible as well. Especially when we hear about their background, their upbringing, their trials and tribulations, and any of their pitfalls that they had to experience along the way. Therefore, you're tuning into this podcast series to show your subconscious that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, you've already started the process of manifesting it. If you enjoy this episode, please leave us our review, comment, and share it with your fellow manifester that's struggling or could really benefit from the information that you're about to learn. Finally, today's guest, Danielle Beinstein, is my own personal psychological astrologer. In fact, she's the only one that I'll work with because many of you know that I constantly tell my personal clients, please do not go see psychics or future tellers. In the pure simplicity that I believe we co-create with our reality, we co-create with the universe, with spirit, with whomever you're tuning into. And I believe we can change anything in our lives and we can materialize anything in our lives. So when we go and see future projectors, they tend to plant self-prophesizing beliefs, which can be positive and negative, and then it's very difficult to reprogram them from the subconscious. And why I love Danielle is because she did her undergrad at NYU, and then she went on to get her master's in spiritual psychology. So not only is she incredibly well-versed, intelligent, she also doesn't future project, meaning that she looks at your chart, what's currently going on, and then she goes through and basically, as a therapist or a counselor would, she pulls up your shadow, your blocks, and helps you put together the pieces in a more broad spectrum. Let's take my example. At the age of 25, everything in my life changed. That's when I quit acting. It's when I started on this path. It's when I started to learn my formula of manifestation. And to me, it just seemed like a very early Saturn return. It was a shit show. My whole life fell to pieces, every rock bottom I could hit. But when I could talk to Danielle, she, without me even telling her that, said around that time is when Pluto, my moon was over Pluto, I believe, which she also went through. And it's one of the most life-altering times that knocks you right into your authentic path. So I've consulted her a gazillion times. I consult her. She's the person who I process with personally whenever something's coming up for me because I don't have a me to call. And she's the next best, if not better thing. And so I've consulted her in relationship matters. I'm a very independent person who needs a lot of space. And the last time, you know, I was like, Danny, what's going on? And she said, you know, blah, blah, blah is in your blah, blah, blah house. Therefore, you do best in partnership, you thrive, but it cannot be structured and it has to have loads of personal space and freedom, which couldn't be more true. And I take everything she says and I implement it and it makes my life more hacked and better. So without further introduction, I cannot wait to have you meet her and I really can't wait to hear everyone's feedback after trying her program, which you'll see and hear about in this, as well as the show notes, as well as anyone who's had a session with her, because I think many of you have, or whoever has a session with her in the future. Keep us posted. All right, so today we're here with Danielle Beinstein. I call Danny Beinstein, who's my personal psychological astrologer, who did, I guess I could say this in the opening, but I'll say it now, your undergrad at NYU for...
I created my own major. It's like, it's a mouthful.
Oh, wow. Okay, great. I mean, that's enough. That's authentic. And then you ended up getting your master's in spiritual psychology.
Yes.
At USM.
Yes.
And you've gone on to start a really bustling practice. And Danny and I align immensely. Mm-hmm. We really believe in the same approach to most of the same things, but Danny has a really added value of understanding astrology in a very grounded and practical way. So we're going to dig in about how you got there and all the things.
Yeah. The whole lot of it. It's so strange because I'm so far from where I ever thought I'd be.
Oh, I bet. What did that look like to you?
I mean, I thought for sure, I get, like, if I go back to being my, let's say my 16-year-old self, right? It's like, I was obsessed with politics.
Remember.
So yeah, prior to being obsessed with politics, I was obsessed with Hollywood, with the business of Hollywood. But then it transitioned into politics because I think I thought that was more somehow... intelligent.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So like that, and that's where I drew my ego from. And so I think I thought I'd be like living in DC in some really beautiful brownstone, maybe being a lobbyist on the Hill or being a political journalist.
Wow. Which you're is gonna like, get shit what? Done as a lobbyist.
I was gonna get shit done, but like I didn't take into account like any of my trauma.
Yeah.
Any of the fact that like I had so much to work through. And also it was a fantasy based on, so basically I would watch a lot of TV as a kid, and then I'd be obsessed with whatever world I was watching.
Who was the expander for this political life?
So West Wing.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah.
I was obsessed with the West Wing.
Yeah.
Of course, like every single person on that show has like 5 degrees from Harvard, which I didn't have. And like, it's actually an anti-expander, that show.
Because, totally, yeah.
Because the barrier to entry is so high
yeah.
that you're like, it seems impossible. So that was one. But also I was obsessed with the show The Practice that was mm-hmm. on in the 90s. So like I just, and then Ally McBeal.
Oh yeah, everyone.
Right?
Yeah.
Like so being a lawyer just seems so fun.
Yeah. Any of my lawyer clients are like, how do we do anything but be a lawyer? Like how do I manifest a different life? Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, so I guess that was, and then when I was like 12 years old, I told my parents I was going to be a time slot coordinator.
Wow.
I invented a job. I mean, maybe it is kind of a job of like what shows were going to be at what times because I was obsessed with ratings.
Oh, interesting.
Just so weird. I don't really know. I can't even begin to analyze that.
That's fascinating. Yeah, ratings. You thought that's how you could really contribute to the entertainment world?
Well, I think it was also like I was obsessed with trends. Like, why were some shows popular
this
and not
so
others?
This is so Capricorn-y. Yeah.
Yes, and like obsessed with the business of that. So I told my parents I was going to be that. Then it transitioned into politics, and then after college, I veered back into media.
Mm. And you did that.
I mean,
for a bit.
Not as if I was like 16 and had a job, but that was my interest again. Was just. All-encompassing media. And I did that for a while.
Yeah.
And I just like could not get a leg up. Like I was an executive assistant, but never like long-term. I would do stints for these like powerful executives. And I was doing everything all wrong. Like I was using my charm and my intellect, but not actually developing skills.
Yeah. So you weren't in your authentic self. You were in your ego shell.
100%.
Yeah.
And my entire self-worth was based on what people in power thought of me.
Absolutely. I can
That's
relate
honest.
To that. Well, going way back really quick, what is your cultural background and upbringing?
So I was raised Jewish, but an atheist, by atheists.
Mm.
So culturally Jewish in New York City, born on the Upper East Side and raised there till I was... 13. And when I was 13, my parents thought it would be better for my younger brother. I had two older sisters who had already graduated and gone to college. And my parents thought it would be better for my brother if we moved to Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
He would have more space. And I was kind of an afterthought.
Mm-hmm.
And they stuck me in public school for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd been at private school. And I grew up in Manhattan, but I might as well have been raised in the South in a way because the the customs were so strict, right? And I was so limited in what I thought was possible for myself. Mm-hmm. And my parents were outsiders, but my dad did well, so we were comfortable, so we were accepted, but we weren't really accepted because mm-hmm. my dad never had any formal education, mm-hmm. and I was raised in a world where formal education was everything.
Mm.
And I felt that, but it was also like the only world I'd ever known.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go to Connecticut, we had a country house, we moved to my country house, and I was like, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was beyond shocking to me. And then in high school, I went back to private school, but a different private school. And I went to a private school that's halfway between Connecticut and New York City because they weren't sure what they were going to do with my brother. And so I was in either situation, I was 45 minutes away from everybody else.
Totally.
So I developed a loner mentality that hadn't been there when I was little. So right at that critical age of middle school, I was thrust into a new environment where I felt very strange about where I'd come from because it was just so culturally different.
Mm-hmm.
And then put in a situation where I felt, again, just far away. And so it's interesting because I don't know if I was always a loner. Mm-hmm. I think when I was little, I was terribly spoiled. And then I got sobered up mm-hmm. real fast. And then I shut down that side of me. So we're talking about manifestation. Like I shut, like when I was a kid, this is so embarrassing, but like I would just ask for it until I got it. Like I would just stomp my foot until I got it.
Really? Yeah. Yeah.
And then I was like, I'm not going to do that. Like I'm just, by the time I got to college, I went through this phase where I'm like, I'm not going to have anything. They were so freaked out.
And how did, because I know that around that time, or it was in college, that astrology started to pique your interest.
So the summer between freshman and sophomore year of college, I lived in San Francisco. And that was I took yoga for the first time. Both my sisters
were living. San Francisco got you.
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
City Lights bookstore. I was walking around. I was taking it all in. No, and I started doing yoga. And some guy at some coffee shop was like, you need to read The Jew and the Lotus. And so like I started reading about Buddhism. That was the seeding of this kind of spiritual journey. And then I picked up a book on astrology. And I was like, what is this? This makes sense to me. The only math I've ever been good at is geometry.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And then it was just a language I understood. Like I started taking French in fourth grade. I can say je t'aime.
Yeah.
That's it.
Bonjour. Yeah.
Bonjour. Like, yeah. Right? But like the astrology was just a language I understood.
Mm.
That's the easiest way that I can explain it.
Mm-hmm.
But still, like I didn't tell people about that.
No, totally. And it's how you are able to easily categorize things, right? For the first time or like
that's a really
track
good point.
Things.
Yeah, I think it gave me a sense of, oh, this makes sense. Like there's something bigger going on.
And a system.
Yeah, and a system.
And can you tell us a little bit, everybody has this time in their life, that time that you spent a gap of your life on the floor crying and why?
So it was 3 years. It was mostly during my master's in spiritual psychology, which was 3 years. And it felt the grief felt like it would never end. And a lot of it was ancestral.
Mm-hmm.
So I was clearing not my own, but what I felt was both my parents, I call them emotional refugees.
Mm-hmm.
So both were recovering from trauma and so, or not recovering. And I think I absorbed all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to, and then I'm the third of four. And so I think I was releasing not only my own, but all of that.
And where was your self-worth at during that time?
It was low, but it was shifting.
Mm.
Like I didn't want, all I wanted was space.
Mm.
Like that's, I didn't want things.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even at that point, consciously I want a relationship. I didn't emotionally. I just wanted space to breathe. And I went very deep mm-hmm. inside myself and a lot of prayer. So that was 3 years, but I've told this story so many times that like, it's so funny. I feel like, so this guy that I dated on and off, because I talk about this all the time, like mm-hmm. this was the catalyzing event in my life, is so he was seeing two women at once. And it was there in front of me, mm-hmm. but I did not see it. Mm-hmm. And I was at my Saturn return. And I went down to New Orleans with him. And I was so excited because I was like, oh, maybe this means we're like actually together. And while I'm down there, his other girlfriend texts me through Facebook. And it's like, by the way, he's been lying to both of us for years on and off. And I was like, I went catatonic, borderline suicidal. He put me on a plane like immediately back. And like I was flattened mm-hmm. on the floor. Mm-hmm. And I was still stuck in that, how do I get him back?
Oh,
like
totally.
He went into recovery and then I was like, I'm going to go into recovery. Totally. And I'm going to get him back.
Yep, yep, yep. I see this too much. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then I was like, and then it happened like again, like post recovery, post me leaving town and coming back, like the three of us all ended up at his house. And she was like, she turned to me, she was older than me. And she was like, what are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing? And yeah, so
that was rock bottom. Yeah.
And then that led me to start my master's.
Awesome. And what would be some of the tools that you could suggest and recommend for people who are in that space, or how to process? And I mean the space of like crying on the floor, processing grief, getting to know your real self, getting to know your unconscious. What are some of the tools that you love for that? I call it upgrading.
It is upgrading. I mean, I think it's allowing it to happen, mm. not resisting it.
Accepting it.
We turn to God or the universe, whatever mm-hmm. you want to call it. We turn to it when we're...
Or gods. That's a big thing I'm getting into these days. Every ancient culture had gods.
What? Like multiple?
Yeah.
I know. Well, that's... Yeah, it's
like
interesting.
We turn them into angels, like in modern, you know, like the First Testament, it became angels.
It's true. It's like... And it's like your spirit guides.
Yeah. Or any of it.
Whatever, yeah. whatever you want to call it. It's interesting. I was watching Carolyn Mace recently, and she said... I was watching just the Super Soul Sunday interview. I turn to her a lot when I'm in a place of just seeking. There's something about her that I find so beautiful and mm-hmm. healing. And she was saying for her that God isn't personal, that she's doesn't sentimentalize God, mm-hmm. but that a miracle is when God bends in your favor.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really interesting, but I think it's like, it's allowing it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's not fighting it. And I love the feeling of a big sob.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I love a release of any kind, a big one.
Like almost to the point of like, sometimes I'm like, do I fetishize it?
Yeah. Like, because I know something really good's going to happen
exactly.
after that's happened. I just know that now through manifestation, but it feels so therapeutic. Any type of massive release feels, it's like, whoa, I just like lost 10 pounds.
Yes.
That's what energetically.
It feels like that. And then often there is like an even physical, like a,
oh,
weight
totally
release as well.
A shift in the body. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's knowing it's not going to last forever, knowing it's a gateway, knowing that if you stuff it, it's going to get worse later.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about, maybe it's like the Virgo Capricorn, like mm-hmm. there's an efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I got to get it out now.
Same. And letting go like teaches that, right? You're like, oh, better deal with it now. Now, or who knows? Or then Carolyn, now it's going to turn into something in my body.
Yes,
like,
totally.
Might as well deal with it now.
Totally.
Or a manifestation, it's blocking me from X, Y, and Z.
But I think, and I think this is my Mars in Scorpio. For me, it was like, I have to win.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not until I really was like, what the fuck am I
winning
here?
Yeah, yeah.
There's nothing.
Yeah.
Like, what is that? Like, what micro world have I created myself where I have made this person a prize?
Mm.
What? Mm-hmm. Like,
and
I
you,
mean,
I may already know the answer to this, but is there somewhere, or what would not, is there? There's plenty of places, but what would you determine would be like a hinging prominent factor in your chart that you can associate where rock bottoms might lie ahead or lie in the current?
Fourth house.
A lot of okay. We've covered that a lot in supported too,
yes.
which is so much information for those of you who haven't cruise over there, because Danny gives you all the information on the fourth house of manifestation.
Because it's the bottom of the chart.
Mm.
So it's who we are alone at midnight too. So yeah, the fourth house.
And how does, like, if somebody were just tuning into their chart, looking at it right now on Layman's right. Cafe Astrology, and they're like, oh my God, mine fourth house is in, you know, Gemini or whatever, X, Y, and Z. What would you, if you were just peering into it blindly, that could maybe give you a little foreshadowing to some rock
bottoms?
I would
say if Saturn were transiting there, which it wouldn't be. If your fourth house was in Gemini, it wouldn't be right now. But also your moon, any major transits to your moon, Pluto especially.
Yeah, we both went through that, you and I. And it was, you were probably going through a preface, all of this, that rock bottom for yourself.
Yes.
That was like, oh, you're going to wake up sometime. We're going to wake you up. Yeah.
Pluto on the moon. It's like, it's so intense. And it's not as obvious to people outside. Mm-hmm. Like Saturn is more obvious to people outside because it's structural.
Yeah.
So, but the Pluto, the feeling of being taken in by...
It's like waves just keep crashing you, crashing you, crashing you, and you can't get out of the waves that are crashing.
Yeah. You know? And you just have to, you can't resist.
Yeah.
You have to just let go.
Yeah. That's how it felt for me.
I always feel best when I just let go.
Oh, I mean, that's the answer to everything. Accept it, let it go, and feel it all, and then work through it. I guess that's simple.
We don't have control.
Okay. Everyone plays the fool in love. You might have answered this. It doesn't have to just be towards romantic relationships. What's that time that you lost all self-respect?
God. more times than I
care
to admit.
Most people can say that.
Especially in this relationship that I'm referring to. He was considerably older than me in years, not in maturity, but we were at the same place. Otherwise it wouldn't have
been
the toxic thing. It's just so, I thought I was so sophisticated. I thought I was like, I'm going to win. And like, I was just an idiot. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want it. It's not that I was just, I just didn't know.
And you were just leading with your ego, I would imagine, in a lot of ways, or the wrong things.
Know. I just didn't know that something else was possible for me. I thought that whomever I was with was a reflection of me, and because I didn't have self-worth, I was like, if I'm with someone who's in a position of power, therefore I'm validated. Mm-hmm. I just had no sense of a relationship being about two whole individuals. I mean, I might have said those words to you when I was
sure,
that age.
Consciously, but unconsciously.
But it was just not at all integrated. Like, I just had no understanding of boundaries or communication, or that I had emotional needs that were worthy of being met.
What was the defining factor that broke the karma attraction of this? So now you're in a very healthy and wonderful relationship. Right. What could you say was that catalyst that finally broke it for you energetically?
I'd love to say it was that moment when his other girlfriend.
Yeah.
I'd love to say that. Yeah. It was not. It was probably years later. I'm just trying to think. I don't know that I could pin it on a specific moment, but it was almost something that I can only say that I recognized looking back. Like, I feel like there was a situation with someone who I had been interested in who was unavailable, and I confronted it, and it did not go my way, which was the biggest blessing ever. But I confronted it.
Finally.
Yeah.
So you stood in your worth.
I stood my worth. And then I got up and I walked away.
Woohoo!
And I remember thinking, like, I always wanted to be the kind of woman who got up and walked away.
Yeah.
And I got up and walked away.
I think there's like a very primitive call. We all, I think, as women feel that inside because we're so conditioned to not be able to do that in many circumstances. But you finally, it was like this primitive, fulfilling prophecy where you're like, I finally did it.
I finally walked away. So I did that. And this is where this stuff is so weird. I did that. And then I had the accident 6 months later.
Oh yeah, that's right. Do you want to talk about that for a minute?
Yeah.
Because that was transformational in your life.
That was. I was talking to you.
Yeah, I literally got off the phone with you and you almost killed yourself right after.
Insane. I'd planned a month-long road trip to kind of like rebirth. I didn't realize it would be so literal. And on day one of the road trip, I still don't know what happened, but somewhere around Monterey, I had a moment and I was like, oh, I'm about to die.
Mm-hmm. You lost control of the car.
Yeah. And then I was observing myself in the passenger seat and I don't know, I woke up, the car was upside down, sideways and diagonal on the 101 South. So I'd been going at 101 North.
Mm.
Thank God there was not a divider. There was just a grassy knoll.
Yeah.
And I can't wrap my head around it, but I was in a deep, deep fog, but
what was our conversation right before?
Well, our conversation was like about boundaries and about what I was going to call
it. Also, like, no, something really big is coming for you. Like, your thing was like, I can feel it. Something's about to not explode, but it was like
birth or something.
Something, yeah. And I was like, something really big's going to follow it. Yeah. And then you literally had something. You flipped a car like many times and almost died.
And then I remember you being like, when I posted on Instagram earlier, you're like, oh my God, I'm freaking out. Yeah. I'm freaking out.
Totally. But what did you get after that? Literally a rebirth. Because your whole life, I mean, so many things fell into place right after that.
Well, I had been a very passive person, but also entitled and in my ego. And my sense of sort of spirituality was to almost be not on earth. Mm-hmm. And ironically, after the accident, I grounded on earth more than I ever had mm-hmm. prior. Mm-hmm. So I just became more assertive. I'm much more assertive mm-hmm. than I ever was. It's much easier for me to set boundaries. I genuinely stopped giving a fuck.
Yeah.
Like before I was like, I don't care, but it wasn't really real.
Yeah.
And then I genuinely, I'm still processing, I think, that change. It was September 1st or 2nd of 2016. So it actually hasn't been all that
long. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. What about in your chart, though, to ask this too, maybe Venus plays a role or one of the houses, but is there somewhere people can look for that time everyone plays a fool, or knowing that they may attract in X, Y, and Z that isn't quite right for them? Where could they look in their chart that might determine a little bit of that?
So seventh house mm-hmm. is partnerships. It's mirroring. Fifth house is romance and play. It's not the committed relationship, but it's kind of how you date mm-hmm. and how you go about dating and how you perceive dating. So there's going to be material in both of those houses. Eighth house is intimacy. Sex, mm-hmm. what you draw in.
And what would be your tips for people being in their authenticity in those houses?
So in the seventh house, you want to make sure you're not projecting. You want to make sure you're owning it. In the fifth house, you know, you want to look at how you, because fifth house also kind of rules gambling. Mm-hmm. So are you a risk taker in love? Are you cagey? You know, are you more strategic? Mm-hmm. Are you more, it's looking at that. And then eighth house is what we psychologically draw in and how we relate to intimacy, how we share our psychic space.
I love that.
12th house is also where if someone's energy is in our 12th house, they're going to alert us to things that are in our unconscious.
Ooh. So if we have people who share that same sign around us, whatever's in our 12th house.
Right.
Excellent. So they're incredible like tension triggers.
Yes.
If you're in a growth phase to be like, okay, I am going to take in a little bit of what they're saying and see why I attracted this and what kind of work I can do around this.
Right. It's actually less to do about the partner and more like, let's say I had Aries in my 12th mm-hmm. house and my partner is in Aries and their sun falls in my 12th house. They may alert me to ways in which I'm not a go-getter, but maybe should incorporate more of that.
I see. Okay.
Or just their presence in my life might say, oh, you know, you maybe have some anger that you're not willing to look at.
Absolutely. So there are mirrors a little bit.
Okay. Yes. It's not as much a direct mirror, more like something about their energy stirs up a part of us that had been dormant.
Excellent. Ooh, I like that. You know. Like they're an allergy.
Yes.
Or something.
Yes. But it can be positive too. Like they may bring about a part that is disowned.
Perfect. Beautiful. Yeah. They bring up your unconscious, which I think everything in life does to an extent.
Totally.
But that's great to have somewhere they can really look in the chart for that. When was the point, and this may not be finished in life yet, but when you found clarity on what you wanted to do and you just had that empowerment of like, oh, okay, I'm going to do this. This is what I'm up to.
So October of 2014, I completed my master's in August. October, I got bed bugs.
Ooh. Yeah.
And it was on an eclipse. And I had to get rid of, I had to just walk away from everything I owned. And I moved in with my sister. And I was like, I guess I should just give this astrology thing a try. I guess I should just be authentic and really do it. And it just flowed. That's all I can say is like from day one, once I made that decision, it flowed.
So I tell this all the time to manifestation clients, even myself included. We kind of know in our like soul what we're supposed to be doing, but because of programming or whatever, it won't be accepted. Totally. We don't do it. And for me particularly, all of my resources dried up. One, the universe loves pushing people out of the nest. And so it's not crazy that it did that for you.
Up.
Yeah.
Right. Totally. And I was like trying to get jobs in media and like just nothing. Yeah. I would say nothing was happening. And then I was like, I should just do this. And it was just one step revealed itself after. And the same thing I have to say with my boyfriend, it was like, it was just, it wasn't a struggle. It was like stuff came up.
Yeah, sure.
Once we were in it, but it, every other thing I had been grasping, every other thing I'd been trying, but this, it was just like, I don't know. We were just kind of in it.
That's what I say. When you manifest the thing you've been calling in, people are like, how do you know if it's a test or a thing? If it literally feels, it just flows. If even though I believe anything in our life, a manifestation or something we attract is here to teach us something. Yeah. So it will never be happily ever after, but it just, it's like a puzzle piece. It just flows for that moment in time.
And the like, not every after is like, I'm still like, I don't understand. You are nothing like what I had want, like asked for, like totally radically different upbringing. Like, so that was like, I had to get out of my own way because it just felt so good. And I had to, I just had to surrender.
And you're so familiar with this manifestation process. And so our listeners, could you tell a little bit about like your manifestation process into manifesting him? Because it was so different. It was great. I loved it. I would get updates along the way. It was fantastic.
The Sons of Anarchy thing.
Yeah.
So I had the accident, September, I think it was first or second of 2016. So I was out of it. Right. And then January, I had, so you ever hear that thing of like, if you hear things in threes,
right? I followed them. Yeah. The signs. Yeah.
So I kept hearing like people around me being like, you should watch Sons of Anarchy. And granted it had completed in 2014. I think. Right. And I was like, I don't want that. Like,
you're
bikers,
like, it's probably not my thing.
Bikers. Like, yeah. I'm not, no, like I like billions. Like that's like, that's my kind of guy. Right. So embarrassing. So I was like, all right, I don't know. I was visiting my parents and like great escape route. I was like, let me just, I'll turn on an episode. And it was like, I entered a vortex. I watched 7 seasons in 10 days.
Wow.
And I called you and I was like, what is going, what is going on? Like, I don't, there is something primal about this show. I don't understand. It couldn't be more different from how the world I come from, what I'm, but I am like, this main character. And like, I know that he's like a giant sex symbol, but I was like, there's something, what the fuck is
deeper,
going on?
Yeah.
And after that, so.
No, the real question was like, okay, am so embarrassing. Am I? There were two questions that I remember came in like at around the same time. It was so like, one was, am I supposed to like be with this actor? I mean, it's so LA. And I laugh because that's happened to me multiple times. It's happened to clients multiple. And I'm like, oh no, it's just an expander. Your soul's really like, this is what I want. And this is an expander. And then I think the second question you had too, you were like, how do I have to meet somebody online, or how common is it for meeting people online with this manifestation thing? And I was like, oh, 99% of my clients meet in person, even if they're online, like the world parts.
I asked that?
The waters. Yeah. And I've sent you a voice text back and I think it was great because you were like, do I have to do the online thing? And I was like, absolutely not, unless you're being called to it, unless you're resisting it because you're afraid of it, you know, like those things. But I remember those were like the two kind of questions around that time. And it was so great.
That's so funny. Okay. So yes, I did ask that. And so I'm finishing watching that series. I don't know if I'm complete with it yet or I'm finishing it. And all of a sudden I had been living in Venice, not during this period, but I like spent all my time in Venice. I'd lived in Venice prior, like never in my life was attracted to a guy with long hair or scruff. Like I wanted the suit. I wanted
rope,
the thing.
Rode bikes or any of that kind of stuff.
Any of that. Yeah. Any of that. Right. So all of a sudden, like I'm watching the show and all of a sudden I'm in Venice. I'm like, oh my God, these guys are really good. Oh, also never dated anyone my own age. Like never, only was attracted to much older. So I was like, what? Like these... what? There's so many good looking guys. what is happening? Like, why am I trying? And then,
and another point to Mark, when Max and I had gone to visit Meredith Barrett, our friend, she just had a baby, and you showed up, you came, and I was so happy.
Yes.
You like looked younger, more kind of rebellious.
Yes.
You were like wearing tennies. You had like eye mascara down below. And I was like, whoa, there's a whole new Danny in the world right now. Something is up. And that's when you were watching Sons of Anarchy. It was like transforming you. It was amazing. No, this is so true, though. Like, people, I tell people all the time, like, Expanders are some of the best shows because they can open your soul up. They show your subconscious in a hypnotic state what's possible. I mean, they're so good for this kind of thing. And it literally, the transformation was like unveiling right then and there.
I got a leather jacket. Like, it was a whole other situation. It's a whole other situation. The Arrivals jacket. Like, I was so into it. So on March 4th, this is also important. The day Venus went retrograde, March 4th, 2017, 6 months technically to the date after my accident because you've taken leap year, right? Or whatever. So, and a year after that other situation where I like was like, what is this? Like, I'm emotionally attached to this person. I have to walk away. Nothing had happened with this person. There was just an emotional attachment, whatever. And so I had to go to this brunch in Venice. It was my friend had put together a brunch, like a gathering. And I always go to Giusta. Like that is, I love
Giusta. You and everyone else.
Yes, right?
And that's why I'm like, oh, Giusta's always packed when I come over there.
Right. So I got a ping. No, go to Rose Cafe. Mm. So I go to Rose Cafe and I'm sitting there against the window. And this guy, he has a different kind of experience of how it went down. But I was sitting there and he came to look at the window behind me to check on his car, but it was his way of kind of talking with me. And he says that I talked to him and then immediately went back into my phone. I don't remember that. Mm. He's like, but it so intrigued me because it was like we were engaged in conversation. It was such an odd tick to like just be like, look into your phone and like dismiss me. I don't remember that at all. Mm-hmm. What I remember is this person walking up and being like, this is the strangest feeling. Like, why do I feel like I know this person? Mm-hmm. But I didn't know him. Mm-hmm. And it was just something felt different. That's the only way I can describe it. Something felt different. Found out he was an actor.
Had long hair.
had a motorcycle accident.
Yes.
Actually, I don't think I found that out in that call, in that conversation. And had the stubble.
Was New Zealand.
Was from New Zealand.
Like he was the British actor, basically.
It's insane. I can't even. It's so good. It's so ridiculous. So, and I just, so this is funny. So I left that. Oh, we were talking and then I said, I had to go. So I did something I'd never done. I was like, I have to go, but if you want my card, and I didn't write my phone on my card.
Wait,
phone number.
Like my business card.
Yeah, my business card.
If you want me to pay for your meal, I mean, I'm totally out. Okay, you meant your business card. I was like, I don't remember that part.
No, I was like, if you want to talk again or continue this conversation, here's my business card.
Wow.
And it's so Capricorn, right? He's like, there's no number. And I was like, you can just email me.
Oh, I love you. You're from like the dark age. I love that. That's awesome. No number.
So I felt so strange the rest of the day. And then I had dinner with my sister and my friend. And I was like, I think I met someone. I was like, he's an actor. That's LA, right? Like, it wasn't even on my radar. And they're like, what do you mean? You're artsy. Like, just go with it. And so I got very scared. And like, he reached out to me. He emailed me right away. And I was like, no, I'm busy. And like, pretended I was busy for a while. And then I hadn't heard from him for 2 weeks and I was sitting at a cafe with I think it's just important to kind of tell these stories because people.
Oh, it's so expanding for people. It's how you manifested your partner.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting at a cafe with my friend and I was like, you know that actor? I was like, I thought he was going to call me. And it's been 2 weeks and she's like, oh, you're never going to hear from him. And I was like, I think I am. And then 2 days later, I was sitting in a healing session with someone. I'd been gifted a healing session and they kept saying, imagine a safe place. And he kept popping into my head, like him holding me. I walk out of that session. He sends me a text. I'm so sorry. I was deep diving for an audition. When do I get to see you?
And I have to also make the note too that Danny kept saying right before this time, maybe it was when you were watching Sons of Anarchy, because that was a really short period, Sons of Anarchy.
Yes, it was 10 days.
But you were like, yeah, I just feel like I'm going to move to the east side. I need more artsiness in my life. Like he was just like orbiting you strong. Like, you know, Daniel. And yes. They're Danny and Daniel. Yes. It's too much.
It's ridiculous.
It's too much.
And he has my dad's birthday and my grandfather's birthday.
Isn't that
I never
wild?
Met my grandfather, but it's so weird. So anyway, long-winded story. That's how I manifested him.
So I'm quickly interrupting this episode to invite you, if you're ready to start your manifestation journey, or if anything you've heard in our manifestation episodes has piqued your interest, to begin. We have a la carte workshops in everything from the basics bundle, which is what we recommend to everyone who starts. It's the formula that actually teaches you how to manifest, unblocked inner child, and unblocked shadow. We also have a la carte workshops on love and money. But the real gem is the Pathway membership because it encompasses every single workshop we have. It's a year-long membership with full access to the few a la carte offerings we have and exclusive workshops not available anywhere else, such as the daily practice, which is what everybody in the Pathway uses, hopefully at least 3 times a week to daily in order to truly create the new neural pathways that one needs in order to manifest, and houses the library of our deep imaginings, which is our unique hypnosis process that allows you to get into your subconscious and overwrite those old neural pathways, creating the new ones. You can use our special code EXPANDED, all caps, EXPANDED, to receive $20 off your first a la carte workshop purchase or $20 off your first month of the Pathway. Again, that's all caps, EXPANDED, EXPANDED. Okay, now back to the episode.
So what has been your biggest shadow aspect you've had to integrate that's brought you the most manifested success?
The desire to be rescued.
This will help anyone with money. It's the best. That's the quickest way to start manifesting money, is not needing that anymore.
I grew up, like I said, I grew up comfortably. My dad was a successful entrepreneur and my dad controlled all the money, like all of it. And that was my, not only that, that's what I saw everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like for the first, you say 0 to 14, yeah. Right of the big years. So 0 to 13, that's what I saw everywhere. Very patriarchal. The men made all the money. The men made all the decisions. The men would withhold or give based on their mood, how they felt. And so I was 100% looking for that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like 100%.
Unconsciously everything, yeah.
Yeah. And then I looked to my sister to do that.
Totally, yeah.
I moved in with her after the bed bugs, and I feared bouncing out into my own. And I stayed there too long, and to my own detriment, but everything happens for a reason. And I just, someone was going to rescue me by giving me a job. Someone was going to rescue me by marrying me. Someone was going to rescue me, I don't even know, circumstantially. I house sat. I did everything to avoid building my own foundation. And that I had to manipulate, or I had to be what I perceive they needed in order to manifest.
Absolutely.
Because I was manifesting through them, or the idea was that I would manifest through them. And nothing ever materialized. And it really wasn't until, ironically, it really wasn't until I met my boyfriend and he held up a mirror so that I completely had to rescue myself.
Yeah, that's the beauty.
And that's been the game changer. That's been the greatest irony, right? Is that I was looking for a man to rescue me, and by him coming into my life, I learned to rescue myself.
Yep. Oh, I love it. Oh, we bring in these beautiful mirrors and lessons, because that's the truth at the end of the day, is that we're all authentically physical beings, and because of our physical uniqueness and authenticity, when we stand in it, wholeness, that's when we can have anything we want, like truly, no matter what we've been programmed. So I love that. And I've gotten to watch you do that right before my eyes. It's still happening. It's magic.
It's really like, even so, we're going to Portugal in August. And like, you know, I can't even tell you how many times I would look at Instagram and watch couples going to Europe, and the idea of a relationship felt so far away, yeah. And the idea of going to Europe in a relationship felt so far away, and the only way that I could conceive of it.
Oh, and I bet in the idea of you, like, of paying for it felt so far away.
I mean, are you kidding?
Yeah.
Not, it was like some guy was going to come along and, like, whisk me.
With all of his money and stuff or whatever, yeah.
And so the fact that we're going and I'm planning it and like I've done it is surreal.
Surreal. You've and manifested all of those.
And humbling, not in a way of putting myself down, but in a in the complete opposite.
Like, oh yeah. I'm so capable.
Yes. Yeah.
I love it. It's been so magical to watch. It makes me so, so happy.
But I think, you know, we look at these images on Instagram and we think, oh, that's how it, or that was my lens, right? Yeah. That's how it happened. Mm-hmm. One gets whisked away. But what if that's not true at all?
Oh, it's usually not the case.
Right.
Yeah, for the most part. Like, I get to see it every day. And if one decides to open their portal in that way, that's beautiful. That's their karma. But it, like, wanting to really bring in money and manifestation and have control over your reality in that sense, this is what one has to do. They have to rescue themselves. They have to expand themselves. They have to go and jump off of all of those cliffs they fear, like going out on their own and doing all of that stuff. So you've literally single-handedly manifested every single one of those things you've mentioned.
It's also wild because if we talk about our lens, you know, to be fully frank, in the world that I grew up in, everybody that I grew up around, the way that they manifested was their dad bought them a house. Mm-hmm. My dad has not bought me a house. Mm-hmm. He doesn't believe in that. Mm-hmm. He was an entrepreneur. He doesn't believe that. I don't have a trust fund, mm-hmm. which is, this sounds really odd because, okay, I grew up well, so it should just be easy. But mm-hmm. it's not, because I grew up with the idea of being seeded the idea of like, oh, it's going to come through someone else. But then it not coming through someone else. Mm-hmm. And me having to learn to do it on my own and then feeling that. So like, for example, most people I grew up around, they all have houses through their parents. Mm-hmm. I don't have that.
And husbands, yeah.
Right, and husbands. And so I know when I get to a place where I'm able to put money down and purchase a home, that, you know, that's the next step.
Totally.
It's like, and not needing it all to come in one moment. Like, that's why, like, even this trip to Portugal is it's a big deal for
totally.
Me. Right?
Totally.
So it's like, and really having gratitude for that and how good that feels. And I know that's what my dad wanted to teach me. He just didn't have, because he came from poverty, he didn't have the tools or understanding of like, oh, I'm raising her in this world. She's going to have these expectations. How am I going to transition her into adulthood if I don't believe in giving her a trust fund? How am I going to teach her? And so I didn't have that. So I kept knocking on a door that wasn't opening.
Absolutely.
And finally I had to say, okay, I'm in my mid-30s. Like, this door isn't being opened for me. Mm-hmm. What am I going to do?
Yeah. And a lot of people go to their mid-60s and say, so beautiful. I love that. Biggest inner child shift you've needed to make in order to make the stuff happen in your life?
So this is almost a reversal. I had to allow my inner child to not feel guilt for wanting what she wanted and not have her feel like she had to manipulate to get what she wanted. Because as a child, what I would do... So there's a story that my mom always tells, which is I was young, we were going to... I don't know, we were going on vacation somewhere and I was obsessed with pound puppies.
Mm, yeah, I love them. Yeah,
right?
Totally.
And so I was like, I want a pound puppy. And I was like, I want this pound puppy. And I would just not shut up. Like I said, I was really spoiled. But not shut up on the whole ride there. And so we get there and like the first thing my mom does is find a toy store. And she's like, Danny, I found it. Like, basically, I'm going to shut you up. And I was like, nah, I don't want it. I just want to know I could have it.
Wow.
So I had a will, right? And the way that I learned to work that will against my parents was to not shut up. Mm-hmm. And as I got older, it became like with this guy, he was a pound puppy. I just wanted to know I could have him, right? I'm sure if there had been any actual relationship instead of just the back and forth, I would have found it very quickly. We are not compatible, right? But it was the grasping, it was the wanting. So I had to let her just receive without feeling like she had to fight for something. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like she could have what she wants just for who she is.
Yeah.
There's also that element in that piece that you weren't getting the attention you needed when you were young, so this was a way you could get attention. Mm-hmm.
Love meant gifts.
Totally.
So that, I mean, that was all the work that I needed to do to sort to begin to unlock. And then it's flowed.
And what has been your most healing or biggest helpful tool or a tool that you use with clients that's helped you overcome a lot of this?
The free form writing, the writing stream of consciousness and then ripping it up and burning it. Mm. So, but it's really shadow work.
Yeah.
it's really just looking at that shadow side. So looking at the, you know, if my parents, so the big story in my upbringing was I was the youngest girl. And so I was the spoiled, manipulative one. And so I had to embrace that, and I had to have compassion. Like, why was I spoiled and manipulative? There was a reason, right? And I had to, like, imagine my highest self really hugging those darker aspects, or those shadow aspects. I think that's been huge. Also, the attraction to power, looking at that.
And for you, the writing stream of consciousness, what does that look like if you were to sit down and do that?
It looks demonic.
Okay, cool. I want to do that. I'm doing it tonight. What do you tell me?
I just take a stack of paper and I start. It very quickly becomes illegible. And it just becomes really
great.
Funny.
This
it becomes
possessed.
Just like squiggly lines. And the other day, I forgot to rip it up because I was running late or whatever. And my boyfriend comes home and he's having a snack and he's sitting at the kitchen table and he picks it up and it's just like demonic.
Oh my God, amazing. You're like, hi, honey.
He's like, someone's doing a clearing. Like, now he just knows, you know, but the first thing was just to hold it up and look at me like, And it's just like, it literally looks like a demon has taken hold of a paper. It's just, it goes from squiggly lines to just like circles to,
wow.
And it's just that it's like art
it's
therapy for a child. Yeah. It's just a purging.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I took it and I put it in the shredder, but you know, that's my process.
I love that.
And then usually what happens from that, oh, this is what happened. It started a sob, so then I went to the bed that I could just have the huge release, and I forgot to rip it up, but then I went back and did it. So that's usually what happens, is it's like I feel it. I can start to feel it coming on if I'm imagining arguments in my head that haven't happened.
Time to sit down and do this. Yeah, okay. It's time to work that out. I love that. Yeah, when you're like, oh, no, fuck you, I should have said this. Yeah, okay. What's the most humbling thing you've ever experienced?
I would say that moment in New Orleans was one. I want to say it was probably a smaller, subtler moment. Oh, so part of growing up the way that I did was that the more the foundational jobs, like the waitressing, the working at a store, I never had those jobs because the idea was that I was meant to get an internship, right? And I was meant to get an internship that had prestige attached to it, right? Like when I worked for the Kerry campaign, I worked for the political director of New York. I worked under him. I wasn't paid, but
totally.
My dad was like, that's good because there's prestige. So I never had those experiences of, you know, waitressing, which I actually think are really, really, really important.
Oh, totally.
And so when I got the bed bugs, I met the owner of Unplug. And she was like, you're going to help me with marketing, et cetera. So I helped with marketing, and then she's like, you're going to teach. So I started teaching. But before that, she was like, just help behind the desk. And I had been raised with the idea of like, no, your education is too high for that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you're just, you don't need to do those kind of jobs. But that was the shift. When I knew that I was competent in taking care of a studio, when I knew that I had this weird thing, I would walk into stores and I was like, I don't know how to run a credit card. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, totally. You're like, I've never done any of this before.
It's like it would be overwhelming for me to like work at a store.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, like I could write a thesis paper.
Yeah, totally.
But that, or like the idea of being a waitress, like I literally felt like I didn't have the skill set. So there was a part of me where I didn't feel I actually knew how to survive in the world.
Wow.
So I did that, and I actually did it really well. Mm-hmm. It was humbling because people were like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm working behind the desk at Unplug, right? But it was instrumental in my growth because I was going back and filling a gap that my inner teenager, quote unquote, should have had.
Absolutely.
And it was really, really important.
Oh, I'm so happy you did that. Okay. When was the point where you figured out, I'm a badass, I'm worth what I want? Because that's a hard thing for women, especially, to reckon with, I think.
The term badass, for some reason, has never resonated with me. It's more like, I'm good at what I do. And I think that came probably, like my friend said to me recently, she's like, you definitely hit your 10,000 hours, you know, like the Malcolm Gladwell thing.
Yeah.
Like it was at a point where I was like, I'm doing this and I'm good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I believe in what I'm doing and I'm offering something of value and that deserves to be compensated at market value.
I love that.
Like it was just very simple. Yeah. It wasn't boastful. It was like, no, this just, because it is, it's not just the hour, it's the emotional energy and it's all the work that I did to be able to get to that hour.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Right? So.
Okay. Today, what would you tell your lowest self?
My lowest self, meaning myself at my lowest point.
Yes.
First of all, you're not gonna be able to hear anything that I'm saying to you.
No. Yeah. You're like, ears are closed. Yep.
But you are decent and you are good and it's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. I love that. The most kismet thing you've ever manifested.
Daniel.
It has to be. I mean, come on, there's too much. Danielle. He's basically the doppelganger. What's the guy's name in the...
Charlie Hunnam.
Yeah.
Except he's dark haired, but yes.
And the limiting belief you picked up that you're still working through today.
I'm still working through this idea of like... the woman being truly like independently self-sufficient, limiting belief around money attracting negative attention, or money being grotesque
or bad,
or at least not. Let me clarify that. Not money itself, but the showing off of what is done with the money. I still have a hard time with that. Like I'm still navigating how being honest about those things or being honest about the fact that like I like nice things or like I have a thing with hotels.
Totally, me too.
So that kind of thing.
Yeah, like that's okay.
It's okay and it's not only not even that it's lavish, but it's okay to share that I'm doing it.
Ah, beautiful. Yeah, to own it.
Because when I went to this middle school that I went to, I was the girl with the biggest house.
Mm-hmm.
I'd come from a world where my dad did very well, but a lot of people did very well. And all of a sudden I was thrust into a situation where I was the outlier. And I had a very strange reaction to that. It was a way that I was able to differentiate myself. So there was an ego attachment to it. And then there was also a sort of, no, I have to like, I don't, that feels repulsive to me. Mm-hmm. So I'm still kind of working out that inner 13-year-old's desire to go back to the world that she was in.
Yeah. To be safe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most important thing you think people should know about astrology or their charts?
Most important thing about astrology is that it's not the answer, it's a tool. And that your own intuition trumps all. And that nothing is good or bad.
Ever. Yeah,
it just is. Yeah. It's like that Buddhist belief of like, perhaps, like how do you really, you don't, we want to judge things as good or bad because we think things should be copacetic all the time, but we don't grow in that way. So the same thing is like in relationships, people are like, it's good if like, you know, you're in the same element, maybe or maybe not.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Just depends on what your soul's trying to work out.
Yeah.
I agree. And what about how does psychology play a role into astrology? Because so many people out there have been to like the really out there astrologers. You're so grounded. It's not about fortune telling, future telling. It's just about like, hey, this is what's coming up in your chart. This is the unconscious. This is what can be worked through. Like, give us a little bit of how that those merge.
I just see it as archetypes. So as human beings, you know, it's why we tell stories, right? So we've been sitting around a campfire since the beginning of time and saying, this is the hero. This is the queen. This is the jester. This is the cowboy. And we all have those archetypes within our psyche. And
Joseph
whatever.
Campbell 101, yes, like go read the books.
Exactly. So our certain charts, whatever the particulars are of our chart, they reveal a tendency towards certain archetypes. And the more we know those archetypes, the more we can get them to work together. It's kind of like the show Herman's Head, right? Or that movie Inside Out. It's like you want them to all work together. Whereas like if you've got a cowboy in there, but you've also got a people pleaser.
Or a queen. Yeah.
Or a queen, right? You got to get them to work together and in tandem. So that's how I view it. It's just psychological archetypes. And then it's a really powerful way to look at conditioning, shadow, the environment that we grew up in, the environment we were parented in.
And for you, or for somebody, actually, let's put it this way, for somebody just pulling up their chart for the first time ever, no experience with astrology before, what are the like three tips you'd like to tell them to look out for, or, you know, what to expect or anything, your three top things you would say to that person?
So most people would say the rising, the sun and the moon are the three most. I think it's really interesting. Notice where the energy is, meaning like, is it clustered or is it spread out?
Because, and you're saying planets in a certain house.
Yeah, so the planets in the houses, right? So if you're looking at a chart, it's a wheel. And if you may find all the energy is clustered in one area, or you may find it's like splayed out. So that's energetics. So if the energy is really concentrated, that person is probably going to be more willful, more focused, more of a, they're going to have probably closer to one expertise, right? Whereas if their energy is all split out, they're more likely to be like a jack of all trades. Mm-hmm. They're more likely to be more adaptable, that kind of thing. It's notice the concentration of energy and which quadrant it's in.
Mm-hmm.
So first, second, third, or fourth.
Great.
A lot of people think that's kind of astrology 201.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is it 102 or 201? I forget from college. But it's
102, maybe.
102,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But it's important.
And what would you say is the least or the most misunderstood thing in pop astrology?
A, that horoscopes are accurate because they may not be hitting your chart in the way and place because of the degree point of your rising. It's complex. That all Scorpios are vengeful, that all Geminis are liars.
That the sun signs everything.
That the sun signs everything, that all Pisces are escapists, you know, the reductive quality of it.
I agree. Yeah. It's so misunderstood, all of those. Tell us about your incredible course that's coming out.
So I'm putting out a workshop on the chakra system, because we all have all seven chakras, right? And they're energy points in the body. And it's really about making the unconscious conscious. So looking at each chakra and what's there to clear out, or at least come into communion with and understand, so that you're not presented with it externally and you're harnessing your energy. Because so much of my focus is astrology, or I'm known as astrologer, but I have a master's in psychology.
Yeah.
And I studied, an entire year was devoted to the chakras.
Oh, wow.
So I'm very well versed in them. And when working with people one-on-one, I bring them up a lot. So it just seems super important to me, and it's highly universal. And so it seemed like the first workshop to put out.
I love that. What do you think is the biggest things people should know for the rest of this year, astrologically speaking, like the biggest transits or whatever happening?
So we've got a summer of retrogrades. Mars is in retrograde until August 27th, and then Venus is in retrograde October 5th to November 16th.
Well, Venus is such a big manifestation planet. How does that affect people in terms of that? I mean, everyone's different because of what their Venus is and where it hits their chart.
So it's going to be in Scorpio dipping back into Libra, so relationship signs. I met Daniel the day Venus went retrograde. So I think it's really dangerous to be like, Venus going retrograde, all my relationships are going to go crazy. It's just a review of how you attract, what you're attracted to. And when we're dealing with Scorpio, we're dealing with power dynamics. So looking at the shadow of the need for power, jealousy, possession, I think that's going to be it for review. And then this summer is eclipses.
So we've got July 13th eclipse.
Yeah, July 13th eclipse. July 27th, and then August 11th.
And what are sort of the big defining things that we should know or be aware of for those eclipses?
Expect the unexpected. It's really just to pay attention to whatever comes forward, it's not a time to negotiate. It's a time when the universe is in charge.
Mm-hmm.
So
you've been catalyzed essentially to something else.
Yes.
Yeah. So just feel into your intuition of what's hitting you hardest right now.
Exactly. Like my bed bugs during an eclipse.
And why? Like, why are you being pushed? Because like what I believe firmly from the universe is it's only good. You're being pushed because you've been too slow about something. Are you bringing something to a close that you needed to pass the test long ago? Or
100%.
Yeah. Whatever's coming up, just don't let the fear rule you.
Yeah, it's just, that's it, right? We tell ourselves a story and that narrative is negative instead of saying, because we're in our comfort zone, right? Instead of saying, well, really, what is the possibility here?
Last question. What has been the thing that's made you the most magnetic in your opinion?
Boundaries.
Boundaries. Can you tell us about your specific... like that's the one thing when you read boundary books, I mean, mine are all energetic boundaries. That's how I just lean into how they need to be. But what would be some of your tools around boundaries, like a way to construct a boundary, how to carry it through? That's something that people could really take away.
So this is another pat sentence, but like no is a complete sentence. So not feeling the need to justify why you're doing something. Now it's not being rude, but just asserting yourself. It's also, it's where are they coming from? So you talked about energy, right? It's like you can tell if someone is saying no from their head versus no from their gut.
And the universe can too.
Yes.
And they're very different no's.
Right. Yeah. So that's solar plexus stuff. That's saying, this is my power center. No, that doesn't feel in alignment for me. So it's all tethered to your worth, like anything. But to me, the specifics around it are, don't, if you think, if you're doing it because there's a should, that's really something to explore and unpack.
It's going to take away your magnetism.
Yes. You'll feel it in your body. And then it's the follow through.
Totally.
So it's not, okay, here's an example. I'm not a group person. I'm not. I'm more of a one-on-one person. Why I sort of leaned out of the circles and into working one-on-one, right? I love doing workshops, but doing them twice a month was too overwhelming to me. Whereas working one-on-one with clients all day, it just works much better for me. I have my moon in the seventh house, it's one-on-one. Mm-hmm. That's just, it feels in alignment. So people will say to me all the time, come to this event or party. That sounds like obnoxious. Not like people I'm getting invited all the time.
Yeah, but
like,
she's so popular. It's great. It's
but annoying. People will be like, awesome. You know, let's do, oh, here's an example. Come to this group birthday. I'm going to take you out
For
one-on-one.
Dinner.
That's not going to work for me. And I want to be able to celebrate you. But, I mean, certain circumstances, I will show up, right?
Yeah.
But by and large, if I feel like I really, that group setting, I can't, the should, I'm pretty good at being like, no, because you know what? You're not going to enjoy me being there.
Totally, yeah.
It's a two-way street, right? That kind of thing. I really, this is a trigger for me when I love to give, but if I feel like there's expectation.
Same. It's the same. It's a Leo
thing,
down. I think. Yeah. Same. Yeah.
So it's pretty easy for me to say no because that feels suffocating to me. But if I'm giving breathing room, I'd like to think I'm incredibly generous, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't like the feeling of being expected to. So I will set boundaries around that because that to me is more about the other person's need.
Yeah, lack or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think this sounds odd, but I think in healthy friendships, there needs to be enormous amounts of freedom. Once there is that, like, you didn't come to my party.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
I can't, you know, that's not the right... I'm not the right friend
same,
for you.
Same, same.
Period. Like, I'm just not the right, I'm not the right person for you.
Absolutely.
I'm the serious friend. Yeah. I'm not the fun friend. It's like when I was younger, people would always be like, let's get Danny drunk. No, it's not fun. I'm just going to want to cry in the corner or sleep.
Yeah.
Like, it's not fun for anyone.
Yeah.
So I had to learn, a lot of it was like around my seriousness and my need for solitude. Like, it's actually not about the other. I have so many people that I love so much in my life. I work all day one-on-one with people.
Yeah.
So in order to give them what I believe they're deserving of and also where they feel like they're getting value, because I take it very seriously that they spend their money for a session, I need to create space around
them. Totally, totally.
You know?
Last but not least on this note, how do you say no? Because that's the hardest thing, I think, for people to set a boundary. It's like, what's your formula for saying no, to construct something of a no. It's so hard for women. It's so hard for the people pleaser.
I'd need a specific context. Mm-hmm. So I usually will make it very clear that it's not personal, because mm-hmm. it's not personal. And I will share it in a way that it feels more of policy. So if, let's say, with a client and they are sending me a lot of emails, I will say, you know, I actually don't respond to emails in between sessions, because if I did, I would be responding to emails all day.
Yeah.
Right. So I have a firm, if you have that question, you know,
save it for the next session. Yeah,
exactly. So that's not personal to that mm-hmm. person at all. Right. And sometimes a client will get me at a moment when I'm like, oh, that's an easy question. Yeah, I can just send off.
Yeah.
But by and large, that's my response. So that would be an example. With my boyfriend, I have pretty good boundaries mm-hmm. in terms of, I'm clear in that, like, he says to me all the time, he's like, you are so good at just taking care of yourself and making sure that your oxygen mask is on. And that's, I can't be a good partner to him unless I do that. And I know myself, I will resent him later.
Yeah.
So I also try and model that. So I give him that space. I'm like, go surf.
Yeah.
Go take care of yourself. Don't say, I needed this.
Totally.
That's up to you to set that boundary. So.
I love that.
You know. Right. I guess that's.
And where can we find you? P.S. If you're not following Dani on Instagram, go tune in, because basically all you do share is like great astrology insight, incredible like other personal insight tools. So she's such a Virgo about Instagram. It's only for like necessity, like
totally.
Things, but it's the best, which is at Dani.Beinstein.
No, just at Dani Beinstein.
Dani Beinstein.
Yes.
At Dani Beinstein.
And then my website is www.daniellebeinstein.com. And when I travel, you'll get photos of travel, but then underneath it will be astrology.
And where do they find the new workshop on your site?
You'll find it directly on my website.
Okay, cool.
There'll be a vertical on my website. Yeah.
Perfect, perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning into the episode, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, we did. And in case you're not totally ready to join the pathway yet, I wanted to share a few of our free offerings that I'll often suggest to people as a little bit of a blueprint to get them started on their manifestation journey. The first place I like to direct people completely for free is The Motivation. You can see it linked below or on our homepage as our testimony library. And it's categorized by different subjects, whether you're calling in career, money, love, wellness, and much more. When you're reading about a member's experience of what they manifested, you're actually seeing to believe and showing your subconscious that that very thing is possible for you. The second place I like to direct people is to the free clarity exercise, which is also linked below. In it, you get to try our own unique hypnosis process, learn about the science, and some journaling prompts. And the best part about this, you'll get a tiny taste of what it's like to go into your hypnotic state, bring your subconscious forward, and create new neural pathways while receiving clarity. And the third thing, if you haven't listened to it on this podcast yet, please go back to the episode titled Manifestation 101, where you'll learn the basics of neural manifestation to truly understand this process. So go ahead and check out those free resources, The Motivation, the free clarity exercise, and the episode Manifestation 101, all linked below. And in an effort to make sure to have representation in this process series, go ahead and submit any process testimonials you have, especially to our LGBTQ+ community, our BIPOC, as well as the WISE, which is anyone in the community who is 45 and over. All right, we'll be back next week.